you know, fuck spaceships, fuck wormholes and science fiction. I just want to watch a fat, pasty white dude play racquetball.
Podcasts, the final frontier. These are the audio logs of the podcast Superhero Time. Their 5-month mission? Explore old episodes of Star Trek, alienate even more listeners, and boldly plow your mom where no one has come before.
Superhero Time presents that one episode of Star Trek. With Chris.
Drug yourself for amusement.
Hey, Mickey.
Set phasers to roofie.
Ken.
I've run out of plugs.
Scott.
Yeah, because if Data dies of dysentery, this is bullshit.
And Fort Max.
My cunning plan foiled.
So, it's a Deep Space Nine week on that one episode.
Woo!
And if you recall from our last episode, we picked the episode that had the most amusing, fake-sounding summary from the wiki entries.
Oh my god.
It's Rivals, the episode where O'Brien is just desperate to beat Bashir at racquetball. And some other stuff happens.
Even though it's kind of the B-plot.
Oh no, it's not.
No, there's in this episode there's a D plot and then a Z plot, and that is it. And for you Canadians out there, there's a Z plot as well.
It does have one really great Cisco line though.
Does not make up for anything.
Sure it does. This episode's great.
Scott, it doesn't sound like you enjoyed this episode that much.
Oh my god. Okay, well first of all, Cisco had hair. That's always a bad sign.
It's not ideal, but it's not a deal breaker.
He was only in like one scene, so I forgot.
Well, like I was saying earlier, this is Star Trek. We have spaceships and adventure and aliens and new civilizations. And there's a wormhole that'll take you to the other side of the galaxy. And this entire episode is about small businesses competing and fat, pasty guys playing racquetball. What
Scott,
the hell?
You have seen DS9 before, right?
I have, but I usually only watch the good episodes.
This one.
It has Quark.
This is a very DS9 episode, it feels like, honestly.
Yeah.
For all that you say, there's a lot of this.
Well,
and that's the whole reason. This episode is what DS9 was meant to be, is what's going on in the Star Trek universe for the people who aren't exploring?
This is the episode that really
exemplifies the concept of Deep Space Nine, which is, so what's going on in town today?
Right. This is for the non-adventurers when they're in the dungeon. So... Not that dungeon, the other one. So, yeah, you mentioned Quark. Hey, Mickey mentioned Quark in here. And I have to say, Armin Shimmerman puts 110% effort into playing Quark all the time. And he was the only enjoyable thing about this episode was watching Quark be Quark, because he just nails it every time.
Always does.
Always.
Yeah, he's born to play Quark.
He is on. Every moment he's on screen, he is just, like,
yeah,
perfect.
Remember who's on Regis and Kathy Lee?
No.
Yes.
As Quark?
Vaguely.
Quark, yes.
Yeah. Oh, man. Is that online anywhere?
Was that the same time they made up Regis as a Ferengi and had him walk around the street outside the studio?
You mean they took off his Regis makeup?
Yeah, they put ears on him. They took off his Regis makeup and put his ears back on, yes. But was that the same instance?
Damn, it's actually not on YouTube, I don't think.
Oh, it's gotta be on YouTube. I've seen it on YouTube. It's gotta be there.
I don't see it.
It might have been taken down.
Yeah.
What's the actor's name? I forget.
Armin Shimmerman.
How do I spell that last part?
Shimmerman.
Thank. No, I don't see it.
Try one of the shadier sites like Vimeo or
Daily Motion.
Yeah.
RedTube.
It's not on YouTube. Shame. You know, honestly, after that Fallout 4 footage leaked on there, that's actually a pretty good I think that was actually Pornhub, but regardless, you know, same
I think you've said too much.
Or have I said enough?
It's that shady
on this
line.
Episode of that one episode of Pornhub. All right, so who's running this clown show?
I think you are, Scott.
Oh, me? You're going to put me in charge of Deep Space Nine?
I've already done summary tonight.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right.
Oh, did Mickey find it?
Good job. I found an article talking about it. It's got a screenshot.
Oh.
Damn, I want to watch this.
It's bizarre to play everything.
Also, Mickey, you might want to lean forward and unplug.
Yeah, there is a YouTube link, but Associate has been terminated due to multiple third-party notifications of copyright infringement. So, yeah, that's why it's not on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Because anybody who's tried has gotten takedowns, which is bullshit. You would think something like a talk show from 25 years ago would be...
Yeah, how much money are they making on that exactly? What are they losing?
That's the kind of thing that should be archived on the internet. Just like as a general rule.
Look, Quark like, being on Regis and Kathy Lee should be carved in the side of a mountain.
Yes.
Like on Mount Rushmore?
Yes.
I'm just talking about like in general, that's the kind of place where I think that copyright holders go a little too far.
So I'm reading this, and I'm just stuck on this one part of this one sentence.
Yes. What's that?
Quark having his ear masturbated by Regis.
Umox, baby. Umox.
Well, I'm just reading what it says here.
That's very in character.
Well, it was funny until he spooched green stuff on him. I mean, that just went too far. All right. So we're ready to start watching this god-awful episode.
You mean this great episode?
Oh God! Okay. Well, I'm getting a show.
Welcome to the podcast, Scott. You got to review something you hate.
Oh, God.
It didn't take me that long because we got to the end of Kamen Rider O's at the beginning of my time. So. Oh no! Wait. Yeah. A couple weeks in, we had that fucking movie.
Which movie?
Movie War.
Oh, where they meet Nobunaga.
Nobu-kun. Yes.
Nobu-kun? Oh, really?
Yeah.
There was a movie for Kamen Rider X where they resurrected Nobunaga Oda, and they called him Nobu-kun, and he just wandered around. It was pointless and awful.
Uh-huh.
Yet the actor came back as one of the best characters in Sentai of the last couple years.
It's amazing. I haven't heard of him. All right. Moving on. All right. So we have a cold open for DS9, and we have... Which I can only assume is Lucille Ball in makeup.
God.
No, it's Tom Baker.
No. You're God almighty.
No, it's Sherry Lewis. Words. It's Sherry Lewis.
Yeah, Sherry Lewis. Yeah. You know, so it is just the wonderful, you know, alien with crap on her face kind of alien. She does look. She looks like one of the Golden Girls. Let's just be honest.
So Sherry Lewis.
No, wait. It's Jeffrey Combs.
Of course.
Well, I don't know. When you look at the makeup, that might be Jeffrey Combs. I'm not sure.
If it's not God, Jeffrey Combs, it's probably Gary Oldman.
If you question it, it's probably Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah. So she's talking to a generic white dude, and she's kind of spilling her guts. And Odo, for some reason, doesn't like this. He's glowering from the staircase across the path.
Now, let's be fair. Odo doesn't like anyone or anything, and glowers
100% of the time.
Yeah. That's just the shape his face takes.
Yes. So this guy is just... I can't tell if this guy's sleazy or handsome. Does anybody have any consensus on this?
He's slansome.
He's heezy.
Oh, you?
No. Heezy sounds like a respiratory ailment.
Faux sheezy.
Like a combination of wheezing and the dry heaves.
Which is what I got from watching this episode.
This episode made you heezy?
Yes.
Man.
Oh, sheezy.
We have our episode title, Heezy.
But the episode title is the title of the Star Trek episode. You're ruining things.
No, you're ruining things.
So it's clear that he's trying to. She's talking about her business plans, and she only has so much money, and she's going to give it away and do this, and he's trying to scam her out of it. And it's very obvious. And Odo comes in and takes him away for talking to a scared old lady.
Which ends with the great line where she says, "But we were only talking." No, you were talking. He was listening.
Yeah. Yeah, which is a good line. Uh-huh. Now, what I did like, though, this dude's costume, I think, is awesome. I love his jacket.
It's just like so many pounds of crushed velvet.
To the point where it's turned into neutronium.
A crushed velvet so thick, light cannot escape its surface.
Holy shit. Yeah, it's measured in mega Elvises. My God, man, this star is 200 mega Elvises dense.
That's like 300 less mega Elvises than the real Elvis was. Oh, Elvis.
See, Scott, this episode's getting better already.
Oh, yeah. Well, you guys make it better. So he throws
That's
him in
how
the
it
brig.
Works.
He throws him in the brig for literally no charge, no reason, says, "I don't like you," and throws him in jail.
Actually, he did have a reason. There was a complaint out on him from someone else he listened to.
But so a complaint. So all I have to do is to get you thrown in jail to complain about you?
Yes.
Well, that's awesome then. It's like,
but Jordan law is not Federation law. It's very flexible.
Very.
Yeah. Vessie actually watched this one with me and had to explain to her. She's like, "How can they do that? I thought they were in the Federation." And I was like, "Well, Odo's kind of like the only lawman for, like, you know, a light year. So I guess just whatever he says goes, because who's going to argue with him?"
Odo is the town sheriff.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the Wild West, basically.
That is how it's treated to her.
He's the town sheriff, and every time they bring in a federal marshal to take over, Odo just looks at him mean until he has to leave.
Yeah. Which I think which is the literal plot of a couple episodes, I think.
Yes.
Now, is this the one that has the cut scene where Odo is staying behind the marshal and he keeps transforming his own nose into a penis and making fun of him? When he turns around, he turns it back to his regular nose?
Yeah.
Okay. Just kind of wiggles it. And then the guy turns around and goes, "What are you laughing at?" And then okay, never mind. Maybe I dreamed that. I'm not sure.
Well, let's move on to the A plot here.
There isn't one. Oh, God. Okay, so we got Calm Meanie, not, you know, O'Brien, actually Calm Meanie, walks in on Bashir wearing a Catwoman-esque skin-tight suit, which looks like he's about to slide in and out of at the same time. Whereas I like that O'Brien comes in wearing a fucking potato sack made out of, like, canvas. Look at that. He's like, he just walked in. Look, he just ate all the potatoes in the sack and then put it on.
Hey, waste not, want not.
This is like the most
racist
show.
There's only like one potato in the sack to begin with because, you know.
And now looking at Kalmini's head, it looks like that potato is sticking out of the top of the sack.
Meanwhile, Bashir is preparing to transform into Kamen Rider.
Oh, good. I'm not the only one who thought that. If I was, I think I would have to quit this podcast.
My first thought was he was trying out for the Ginyu Force.
Also, same thing. Yeah. Same thing.
It's more Sentai, but you know.
So I particularly love how the setup of these characters pretty much emphasizes all of their character traits as hard as possible.
Yeah.
Become caricatures.
Up to this point, Bashir and O'Brien really haven't gotten along either.
And they still don't for like 5 years.
No, they start to get along a little bit better after this one, I think.
Jokes, Ken, jokes.
Oh, well. Regardless.
Thanks for contributing, Ken.
Jesus, go ahead.
Well, I thought it was cold in the face.
It's dump on Ken night.
Apparently.
That's most nice, isn't it?
One thing I was trying. I was trying to explain to Vessi like what was going on in the scenes, like, and I actually stopped myself. I was going, oh well, the thing is, Dr. Bashir, that guy, he's actually been augmented genetically, so he's actually kind of like superhuman, but he doesn't know it yet. And I stopped myself because, like, ooh, I didn't want to tell her spoilers, and then I felt really ashamed. So then we cut to the prison cell, and there's our Elorian dude in his cool ass jacket. And there's apparently a living trash heap sleeping on the bed.
Okay, yeah, this is our Tom Baker.
Yes, this is Tom Baker.
Yeah.
No, I didn't think that, yeah, but you're absolutely right.
Hard times, man, hard times.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not even like a jacket, that's just a scarf that's kind of eroded over his body. So he keeps trying to wake him up, and it's all very cute, whatever. He's snoring.
Kind of cute, kind of gross.
Oh, just, you know, stretching for time. Mm-hmm. God, I can't wait to complain about this episode when we get to certain parts. I'm just salivating to art to just, ugh. This freaking episode.
So he gets woken up.
Yeah, he gets woken up, and he looks like one of the Golden Girls now. None of the ones that are alive.
You mean none of the one that's alive?
Yes, none of the one that is alive.
No, I'm sad. Yeah.
Aww.
That's okay. Betty White will die soon enough, too.
Aww.
Well, you're really trying to make this episode seem happy by comparison, aren't you? You're really reaching. So the creepy old alien guy who's like Tom Baker after a bender has what I can only assume is a space Tamagotchi. Tamagotchi?
Yeah, okay.
It looks like it's about as fun as the little Tiger LCD games.
Without yes. The LCD part.
I have to imagine that there must be like some like hypnotic quality to the light or something. Because otherwise it makes no sense to me.
I think when you win, it sends out like an electrical signal through your body that causes orgasms.
Oh, so it's the thing. It's the thing in the Wesley episode from season 5 of Next Generation.
Yes.
So he's sitting there talking to it and loving it and caressing it like it's a metal tribble.
Oh, there you go. That's what it is. It's an artificial tribble.
Oh yeah, it's a cyber tribble.
Because you know the real tribbles are extinct at this point in the timeline. So someone's actually made, like, you know, tribble Furbies or something.
Tribble of Borg. Because you know the Borg have assimilated tribbles.
Oh, God.
When you pet them, they sound like a 56K modem.
God, I never knew I wanted this toy until you just told me.
Okay, I think actually this episode is over after that point, because that is the highest we can go. I think this entire podcast is over.
Good night, everybody. So then it transitions, the old alien dies, and then it transitions into every fucking sitcom for the past 30 years, which is the old, fat, unlikable man walks in on his skinny, hot wife.
Transitions into he won, and he dies.
So, yeah. So you mean it transitions into an O'Brien scene?
Yes.
Which... That's most of O'Brien's time on Deep Space Nine.
He comes in sweaty,
right.
Angry.
What does Keiko see in O'Brien?
I don't know.
Because he's irritable, lumpy, sweaty.
Yes.
I would assume he's poor in bed. I mean.
Well, he's Irish, so yeah. Let me speak from experience. We are terrible in bed. Well, the only reason we procreate is most of us are Catholic, so .
It's possible she likes the angry sex.
Oh God! Yeah, she's Asian, so I'm pretty sure she just sits there and squeaks
like a pillow.
Not my pillows. Oh, and then O'Brien takes his shirt off, and we get to see him in his pasty glory. Remember that scene in Futurama? When the Dr. Zoidberg takes off his shell?
No.
What, did you block it out, or are you just messing with me?
No.
Okay, fine.
So this is the only shirtless shot in DS9, isn't it?
I don't know.
Hmm.
Because, you know, Next Generation was just lousy of shots of Picard bearing his chest rug out to the world.
And his legs.
I wonder if that was in Stewart's contract.
I think it's something he wanted to do. He just did it, you know.
He just showed up on set. Patrick Stewart. And it was too late to go back to wardrobe, yeah. So they just started filming. What are you going to do?
Also, imagine when the admirals call up in the middle of the night and he opens up with his silk blouse hanging open. They sort of hold a file up to cover him up to the neck while they're talking to him.
No. There's a button on the console where you can just zoom in on the face.
I thought he was just going to add black bars.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they just letterbox him.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's like the floaty ones for nudity and TV shows.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah. It's a very advanced AI system. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we get enough of O'Brien's morbid Marlon Brando-esque physique.
And his temper tantrum.
Yeah. Which is so angry.
Better at a game than me.
He's younger and weighs half what I do.
He probably does cardio.
So then it transitions to Jadzia, who has 2 seconds in the entire episode, and then talking to him, and this whole funny little scene where he never eats a sandwich.
Okay,
the writers
thought
that was clever.
So I want to point something out here. O'Brien comes home, drenched in sweat, so much that he has to pull his shirt off and everything. Meanwhile, Bashir is down in the Replimat, still wearing his, sporting outfit. Presumably not having, bothered to take a shower or anything in between. And he's just, sitting there in the middle of a crowd trying to eat lunch.
Yes.
Yeah.
I imagine their match sort of went with Bashir just standing in one place, serving the ball once. And O'Brien's got winded from walking from one end of the court to the other to pick up the ball. I can't do this! Fuck you! I'm out! Then Bashir goes off to lunch, and he tries to find a salt shaker that works.
No, that's... Okay, so this does highlight one problem with how Deep Space Nine's condiments are served. They put their ketchup in opaque bottles. So it's impossible to tell when it's empty.
Well, they're just mini replicators. It just creates more all the time.
Except not, because he goes through 3 of them before he finds one that works.
Well, it's almost as if he's very unlucky all of a sudden.
I know, imagine that. No, but they have these, die-cast metal ketchup bottles, so it's always heavy, too, so you can't tell if it's full.
Yeah.
They've made the process of putting ketchup on a hamburger as counterintuitive as possible.
Creating an opaque surface around the material keeps the sunlight from washing the flavor out, just like with milk.
Well, that could be an issue with replicated food. It's like how when you print a photo on regular paper and just, inkjet ink, it'll fade really quickly if it's exposed to light.
See, actually what it is, those little metal canisters are actually tiny little replicators.
That's what I said.
Charge the batteries on them by shaking them, like you do with those flashlights.
Oh, that's so cool.
So they never actually run out, you just gotta shake them up a whole bunch. And the first we got, we hadn't been shaken enough.
I kind of the idea, though, of replicated food being stuff made on an inkjet printer.
I think that's what the protein resequencers in Enterprise were.
No, that was a dot matrix.
Make your jokes.
I miss the sounds of dot matrix printers.
You can just see it.
This discussion is full
sleep.
Of old sounds.
Yeah.
Hi, Mickey.
Ooh.
I'm not the oldest one here.
Yeah.
You're the oldest one in my heart.
All right.
I thought
so...
you were the oldest one.
No, Scott's the oldest now.
I'm old.
By a week and a half.
Oh.
I don't know if Formac sounds more disappointed that I'm old or the Hey Mickey isn't anymore. Oh, well. All right, so...
Well, Fort Max, Don will always be older than either of them.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah, barring some sort of, chronoton mix-up. All right. No. All right.
He'll always be older, even if physical age is not what we're going by.
So Odo goes down and lets our Elorian friend out, and The other thing I said, he puts him in the brig, but doesn't confiscate any of his stuff, doesn't search him for weapons or contraband. It just leaves him in there. So now the guy walks out with an object that's clearly not his, clearly stole it off a dead alien, and Odo doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Odo just is like, man, that sucks. And rolls his eyes.
He's dead. I mean,
probably has no family.
Well, either he's either not very good at his job, or he's doing it in a very roundabout way of saying, I'm going to let this guy out on a line and see what he brings me back.
Oh. Terrible, terrible. All right, but now
or Quark just walked by the front of the station and Odo forgot what he was doing.
So speaking of Quark, we finally get to the shining moments in this episode. We get to see Quark and Morn. Morn! So Quark is trying to scam Morn and a couple other people using these, I can only assume, are loaded space dice. And the Elorian buddy wants to trade him for the device. And then Quark pours him a tall glass of, what the
grapefruit
hell is that?
Juice.
Pink lemonade.
Yeah, I was going to say like liquid cotton candy. Melted Jolly Ranchers.
I like how you went to liquid cotton candy before you thought of pink lemonade.
Or grapefruit juice.
I'm not very healthy. My
well,
diabetes.
They sold liquid cotton candy in the late 80s, I remember. Like, they sold it in soda bottles.
So, and we get this rather drawn-out scene of Quark and the Elorian trying to haggle for the device. And again, Quark actually does well. He tries to trick him and everything. He's real, you know, sneaky with it and tries to undersell him and tries to take it, but he has no idea what it is. And Quark actually gets pissed the Elorian doesn't bite and take the deal. The Elorian realizes
like
it's viable.
Yeah, I kind of like how this plays out, too, because, like, he's an Elorian. He's a listener by biology. He knows things to look for in people's behavior, which means he knows the tricks Quark is trying to pull on him, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yeah, I might have taken the money you offered me, but when you poured me the free drink, no.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got something here.
This is one of the few scenes in the episode that, like, isn't directly insulting to intelligence. I mean, this is actually pretty well written and pretty, pretty interesting.
Well, I mean, it's not a matter of being insulting to intelligence or not. It's a matter of, you know, it's a comedy episode.
True, but we'll get toward the end when we talk about insulting intelligence. We'll get to that. It's on
okay.
My freaking list. Oh, boy.
Oh, did you actually make a list?
Well, it's a very short list. It's a very short
list. Oh, okay.
That was delivered on a short bus. All right.
Well, good. Keep making lists. That's exactly how we operate here.
You are totally organized.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is pretty ship shape, I got to say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're still talking. They're
well,
still...
actually, this week is more like bicycle wheel shape.
Oh, my gosh. The scene just never ends. They just keep going. Quark keeps trying to add money to it to buy it, and the Elorian just isn't having it.
Wow. So the Elorian leaves and finds a grieving widow to prey on, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, like immediately walks around the corner. Finally. Okay. And this lady reminded me of somebody, but I couldn't quite place it. I think
your
she
mom.
Reminds me of the dark... Hmm?
Your mom.
No, 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 no. She's not nearly that skinny and attractive. No, she's like reminds me of the dark-haired lady on The Office. That's what she reminded me of.
Pam?
No, no, that's the redhead. I'm talking about the dark-haired one with the cat-eye glasses.
Michael?
Yes. All right. So he comes up to her, and he's trying to, like, you know, pry information out of her. He just stands there and smirks, grabs her, like, amethyst or whatever, and, like, seems to entice her with her own object. He goes, this is yours, you own this. And then she takes it as this big, deep, meaningful thing. He just smiles smugly. And then enough of that nonsense, we get back to the A-plot.
I like his race because they're like anti-betazoids.
Yeah.
They're empathic, but they're assholes.
Yeah.
Are they even empathic?
I don't know.
I think they're just very intuitive.
Two out of the three Elorians we know about are assholes.
This is true.
So the odds are not in their favor. All right, so we're back to Potato Head and Ginyu Force playing racquetball.
That's right, Bashir is trying to throw the game.
Yeah, but he just sucks. Ori is being strangely unlucky. Weird.
He's just acting like he sucks.
No, actually, I think in this case, he actually is trying to throw the game so he doesn't have to play against O'Brien anymore and kill him with a heart attack.
Right, because you can see at the end of the scene when O'Brien storms out, like, the look on Bashir's face is, well, that didn't work.
Or is it, I'm really being serious and I'm frustrated? I don't know.
No, it's not that.
No.
So you know things are shitty.
About it later.
Yeah, that's true. You know things are bad when Quark runs to Odo for help. So he comes in and complains about the Elorian. How dare he, you know, take over my business and be competition, which he just opened a casino next door. So basically, we have the Lowe's and Home Depot situation going on. This makes good drama, people. Then we get Sisko with
Quark had an exclusive contract.
Okay, now here comes the best Sisko line.
So they get on the turbo lift.
Quark is talking Sisko's ear off, of course. Yeah. And as the turbo lift goes down to the next level, you continue to hear Quark talking in the turbo lift. Because Quark.
All of the part where he was like, he didn't make a deal with him. He didn't beg him to stay. He blackmailed him.
And, you know, it worked out pretty well for you.
So I still think the Elorian buys some of his clothes from, like, discount Romulan stores.
Well, it's gray enough.
Yeah, it's
gray enough,
it's got
but there's not enough quilt.
Well, no, it's all quilted in checkerboard, and it's got these perfectly horizontal shoulders. It looks kind of Romulan. That's what I'm saying. It's like the Marshals of Romulus. That's where he buys his shirts.
Then he steals his brother. Actually, if you took Romulan fashion and put Betazoid hair on it, you basically have the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, you just have designing women. You'd have
the
Delta
80s,
Burke.
Yes.
Besides, that can't be Romulan. There's not enough belts on it.
Okay. So the Elorian actually steals Quark's brother.
Rom.
Rom, that's right. Yeah, Nog is the kid. That's right. That comes in later for cute factor. That's right.
Yeah, he steals the Space Knight.
Yeah. So our Elorian Romulan discount hipster runs into the old lady he was trying to scam at the very beginning of the episode, which is a nice little callback. And even when I was watching this, I have to say, after watching her, I was like, wait a minute, she's trying to scam him. And I felt really smart. And then, again, shame.
You said like that turnaround's a regular occurrence.
Watching this episode, yeah, anytime I was like, oh, I'm enjoying this, then I felt, oh god, what am I saying?
You just your instincts know better than your brain, that's all.
Well, it's fooling me, you know, because it's Star Trek and I think it would be good
because it is
far too intelligent to enjoy this low humor.
Oh, clearly.
You sound like Jason Mink.
Oh, I will kill you. I will drive to where you are and I will kill you.
Ah, in jokes.
Die from it? All right, so she scams the hell out of him. And then we have, and here's another thing. Apparently the 60s still exists because we have a female character that is literally just a body. That's all she is. And
well,
they actually...
Not every race in the quadrant is as evolved as the humans. Some of them still like tits.
Oh, my God. I mean, she sits down in his lap. And then we see the walking purse.
Yeah, so you know that scene where the widow's introduced? I hope you enjoyed that, because that's the last time she's seen in the episode wearing something halfway reasonable looking.
Yeah.
That was her mourning robes.
Because when she got involved with Martis, he bought her the biggest purse on the station, and she decided to get into it.
I am really into purses. No, literally. I like she's wearing some sort of like comm badge too. It's like, wait, is that like the future Enterprise comm badge? Oh wait, no, I can't tell.
Scott, those are called brooches when ladies wear them.
Because
yeah,
I
okay, would, so the yeah. So the future Enterprise comm brooch.
So we get, and in the background we see these giant glowing metal tits, which look like the little gambling device he had earlier in the episode.
They're electro nipples.
Yeah, yeah. So then we cut to Ops, and we have Kira, yay, who has like two lines, and back to. I like Kira.
I like the just the implication that she's been gambling down there at a place.
Oh yeah, they're much too cool about everything that's going on in this. And Jadzia's on the computer trying to find something.
Got her feet all kicked up and shit.
I know, like she fucking roams the place.
Well, she does, really, honestly.
Now, if Kira were doing it, I could see it. But, I mean, Jadzia, come on.
But Kira doesn't even get a chair.
I mean...
Kicking your feet up means relaxing, something that Kira isn't capable of doing.
I was about to say, Kira, no. Jadzia, yeah.
Okay, so let's flash back to the start of Deep Space Nine. Kira was using Sisko's office before Sisko arrived. At that point, she had a chair.
Yes.
Sisko threw her out of his office.
Yes.
And from then on, she never had a chair again.
No, she didn't.
And everybody ranked below her all had chairs.
Well, she's not Starfleet.
And just to rub it in, Sisko, even though he's never in his office, he put a baseball in there. So she got replaced by a baseball.
it's kind of like marking his territory. Instead of pissing on it, he just puts baseball down there.
The baseball and that wacky clock he spent the episode where everybody was crazy building.
Yes.
Which stays for the rest of the series.
Yes.
I bet there is absolutely no interesting commentary on that either. No matter what DVDs we'd watch, no one would mention it.
What, the clock?
Yeah, the clock.
It sure is a clock.
Yeah. So, enough of that foolishness. Now let's get back to what really matters. So we have O'Brien laying on the ground, covered in sweat, which looks disgusting because he's wearing... It's just like a 6-inch thick sweater. And that's got to be soaked through. I mean, there's got to be 2 pounds of, like, exuded waste on
that
thing.
He's leaving sweat stains on the bulkhead.
Yeah, that's why he's not winning, is because he keeps slipping in his own sweat.
Well, no, in this case, he actually slipped on the racquetball. Ball.
Yeah, it's kind of an amazing feat, as Bashir points out.
Yeah.
Stepped on the ball in mid-flight.
And
which
Bashir,
made me wonder, how high does O'Brien raise his leg when he's, you know, taking a step forward?
And Bashir, we hate to see you go, but we love to watch you leave. Because he's still wearing that skin-tight suit.
I think the thing is, like, they had so much trouble getting him into it in the first place. They realized they would only have one chance to shoot these scenes, so they just did them all at once. That's why in the Replimat scene, he was still wearing that outfit, because they had to get that shot in that day.
So O'Brien, defeated and ejected, and still literally drenched with sweat from every orifice. I mean, dripping, he's leaving a trail like a snail, goes into Quark's, which is damn near abandoned, which, of course, Quark is apoplectic about.
Scott, you can't use that word on this podcast. Our audience won't know what it means.
Well, tell your mom to get a dictionary. It'll be fine.
I don't have to tell her to get a dick. Oh, dictionary. Sorry.
Oh, God. So much worse than I wanted it to be.
That's what she said?
So Quark is commiserating with O'Brien. They're both just angry. Just two angry, angry little men.
Just well, no, yelling. I like this, actually, because Quark is like, you know, going off on how all that guy does is listen. Well, I can listen, too. O'Brien, what's your problems? I'll listen to him. O'Brien starts talking, and Quark immediately starts spinning off into his own world. I can use this. This is great.
This is kind of like, there's almost a Pinky in the Brain quality to this. Where O'Brien's going off on this one thing that really matters, and at the same time, Quark is just like, he's taken the first syllable of that and just like slid off into his own path. And they come out at the same point at the end, you know.
Right, right.
Quark,
it is
are you
a good
pondering
thing.
What I'm pondering? Well, I think so, O'Brien, but like.
Well, when are we going to get 1,600 bars of gold pressed platinum? Norf. Norf. All right. No, and honestly, again, it's a quark scene, so it is. It's a good scene. Mm-hmm. All right. So then we cut to absolute total violence against consoles, as Kieran Reese basically karate chops in half the main console in Ops. I wonder if she's having her special Bajoran time of the month. So she's complaining that the system's acting funny.
She found out it had solitaire on it.
She found out I had
no recreation on Ops.
She found out I had Windows 10 solitaire on it. It was mad at the microtransactions.
Ooh. No, so this was back like, then.
No, this was mid 90s, so they still had the pinball game, which was awesome.
Oh yeah, 3D pinball.
Yeah. So Kira takes a pratfall off camera. All we hear is the sound of her falling like a horse breaking its leg.
Oh, Sarah Jessica Parker was on the show?
Oh! Wasn't she going to be Beta Ray Bill in the comic book? Anyway. So then we cut over to the Elorians Club, which is booming because everyone's having a great time. And he's freaking out because people are winning and he's losing everything. And of course,
like,
he blames.
Every machine hits the jackpot at once.
Yes.
With the best line to Rom, too. I don't suppose I can blame you for this, can I?
I don't think you can. He's so helpful, too. I mean, how can you not like him as a character? So we get Quark figuring out his plan with his little triangle chit.
This is how Ferengi's chit in triangles.
Yes. And he just eats up his character. He just loves being Quark so much. Uh-huh. So then we cut to the scene where Quark has the crowd. He's standing up on, I can only assume, is a very tall table because we can actually see him. And
oh, come on. He's not Nog.
Yeah, but he's still tiny. He's a tiny little man.
Yeah.
And he decided that he's going to have basically a prize fight of racquetball between the doctor and the engineer.
The mechanic.
Yeah, Miles the mechanic. Again, another great scene with Quark.
What I love, though, is like right as soon as Bashir and O'Brien are about to say, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Quark jumps in with, it's for the orphans.
Yes. That's what I
care about,
because
orphans.
Yeah, because he knows how to play Federation goons. He knows how to mess with them. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. He's like a good opportunist, a good capitalist. He knows how to twist his audience, and he knows how to get to the hearts of Federation people. And like, O'Brien's like, orphans. He says it with such anger. It's like, oh, I hate them. Fucking orphans. Say they should change it where it's going to be 20 orphans versus O'Brien in a steel cage match.
I don't like those odds.
For who?
Well, that's okay. The orphans are riding motorcycles around the inside of the cage.
Oh my god! I was going to say O'Brien has a has like a hyper spanner or something. So they realize they're being suckered into this, and they really can't do anything because Quark's a genius and smarter than everybody else on the station. So for the orphans, it even has like the holy men, the Bajoran like priests there to like enforce yes. it. It's awesome. Uh-huh. And now he goes over and gives a smug ass look to the Elorian.
Because the spectacle has drawn all the crowd back into Quark's.
Yes. And he just sneers and slinks back into his casino.
To the comfort of Rom.
Yes. And then Quark does this thing, which I don't know how to take it, where he caresses the upper edge of his earlobe. Which, is that like giving yourself a quick stroke? I mean, what was that?
I think you're right, actually.
Yeah, it probably is.
I mean, is that kind of reaching down your skin and giving yourself a little, mmm.
Mmm.
Yeah, he's adjusting himself a little bit there.
Sort of an adjustment and a pelvic thrust towards the competition.
Uh-huh.
Right. All right, so now we got Jadzia again and Cisco, and they're trying to figure out what happened to that darn file. This is so interesting. There's a file. There's a program that was here, and now it's not. I just don't get it. And then Kira's not hurt, so she comes trottling down the stairs with her cloven hooves.
Kira the Satyr.
Yeah, pretty much. So they start figuring out, well, that's weird. Some very unlikely things are happening. I don't know if this has anything to do with anything.
Well, we're in space, so probably. Let's investigate.
Yeah, so then there's like particles, and there's, I don't know, there's techno babble happening, and I just
there's legitimately incorrect science happening.
Yes, exactly, and I was just like, So then we cut back to Rom, and then the flesh puppet, and the Elorian.
And at some point here, Rom is like giving Martis his whole like sad childhood story about how Quark stole his Christmas presents and replaced them with vegetables.
Which is so awesome because Elorians are superpower can be so irritating. I love the fact that they turn like their species ability against them. That's so delicious to me. You'll never see Ganon go, shut the fuck up! And then there's some sweet titty action going on. And there is one angry purse.
Yeah, that scene reminds me of the scene in RoboCop where the guy's got the cocaine and the two hookers.
Yeah.
And then Boddicker walks in and says, bitches leave.
Yeah, he does. Red Foreman comes in and lays down the law. Again, the flesh puppet girl never says a word the entire episode. I mean, is she like an android or what?
Well, if she had dialogue, they'd have to put her in the Screen Actors Guild, and they didn't want to do that.
Instead, she's a Dabo girl.
Yeah.
And I'll say, what Dabo girl's ever said anything interesting?
Certainly not Lita.
Oh, ow.
Ooh.
I would like to point out, very briefly, that in the Mirror Universe, Lita is like one of the highest admirals of, like, Starfleet. It's the Mirror Universe, where everything is opposite, so the lowly are mighty and vice versa.
I'm sorry, but Mirror Universes are the laziest writing trope.
Yeah. Like, okay, so... The original series Mirror Universe episode, that was fun. When Deep Space Nine revisited it to see it in the future, that was interesting, and that should have been the end of it.
Yeah, the way they handled it in DS9 was interesting, I thought. It treated it as if it was that same universe, you know. So, yeah.
Seeing the aftermath
and then it became a yearly thing.
Basically, yeah.
So you didn't like the Enterprise one where they did it, where Hoshi becomes like Empress of the Empire?
Okay, the Enterprise one is kind of up to the point where Hoshi becomes the Empress out of nowhere.
No, I thought it was awesome.
I think the best part of the Enterprise one is the cold open to the first part, where the Vulcans come off their ship and Cochrane just shotguns them.
Yes, that was. Talk about a hook for an episode. Holy crap. How could you watch that first scene and then not watch the rest of the entire episode?
And the rest of it's just kind of a letdown compared to that, but, you know.
Yeah, I still thought it was cool, though. I thought it was still good. But no, my question is, and I've read some fan theories on this, and maybe you guys have some because you're huge nerds, is that that was the moment.
You read fan theories.
I don't know what you're talking about. So one of the theories is that that was the moment that the Mirror Universe became the Mirror Universe, was that before then, the timelines were exactly the same, and is when Cochrane shot the Vulcans, that's when it diverged. But no earlier. It was that
okay,
moment. Okay,
so I will refute that with one point, which is if it wasn't an alternate scenario before that, where did he get the shotgun from? Because he wasn't carrying that the rest of the time.
Right. But I mean, I'm sure there were guns around in this camp somewhere. I mean,
right, but
he
just pulls a shotgun out of his jacket.
How do you know he didn't have it?
I'm sure someone would have noticed that beforehand.
he had that big coat on. How do you know he didn't always have it on him? I mean, if I were him, I would have a weapon on me most times.
He was drunk most of the time, so.
Yeah. I know when I'm drunk, I absolutely want a gun.
Here's the question. What is Khan's story in the Mirror Universe?
Oh, God, he's got to be like some sort of savior Christ figure.
I would kind of think in the Mirror Universe. Oh, his origin?
Yeah. If his origin is different than the Mirror Universe, then
that comes down to what Scott
before then.
Yeah, that comes down to what Scott is saying, where if there's not a branch that distinct before Cochrane.
That's what I'm saying. That Khan is probably the most well known character.
Yeah.
That predates the series.
Mm-hmm. Right, because he was
kind of certain they would have covered him.
Yeah.
At some point.
And like I could kind of see Scott's point too, where if Khan woke up and had the opportunity, he would probably try to overthrow the Empire.
Yep.
And he would be looked at as some kind of heroic figure. Yep. On the other hand, I think when the Mirror Enterprise encountered the Mirror Botany Bay, Kirk probably just had it blown up.
It wouldn't be that simple. He would never do something that simple. He'd want to exploit it or use the technology because the Mirror Universe is all about stealing technology.
Okay, the alternate thing would be that they would board the Botany Bay, take all of the augments back with them, and McCoy would dissect them all to learn how they work.
That's more likely. I think that's right. But how would they? I mean, how would they? Yeah, the Mirror Universe.
They would never wake them up. That's the thing.
Well, maybe. I mean, maybe.
What'd you find?
Mirror Universe Khan's biography of Memory Beta. Apparently, he stayed on Earth and his lineage continued on throughout the centuries.
I think I like my version better.
Right.
But yeah, I think I do. That shows that Mirror Universe existed before he shotgunned the Vulcans.
Mm.
That is true, because as they say, the Khan Noonien Singh was born in 1970. Because he rose to power in the 90s during the eugenics wars,
which totally absolutely happened in modern Star Trek continuity.
Hey, how did they hand wave that away in Voyager? And they say, oh, isn't there supposed to be eugenics wars going on right now?
They didn't even mention it.
No, I think Tom Paris or somebody, because they time traveled back to the 90s. I think they said something about that. They kind of hand waved. Oh, well,
didn't they say
it was like a shadow war that wasn't like with tanks and guns, but it was something else?
That I think what you're thinking of might have been brought up in Enterprise.
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, you're the big nerd. I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know this.
No, Voyager very pointedly ignored that whole part of it when they went back to, 90s Los Angeles.
Right.
If that came up on screen ever, that would have had to be an Enterprise. And probably when, they brought Brent Spiner in because they have to.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they needed ratings.
Yeah, I think Brent Spiner pretty much gets Prima Nocturnus, I think.
Yeah, and Enterprise probably would have had a whole three-parter about here's why the eugenics wars look different.
Yeah, I think they would have.
The whole point of Enterprise was to massage away the incontinuities of everything, wasn't it?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
How good of a job did they do? All right. Well, back to the exciting present time on the frontiers of the Federation.
All right, so we're back to Purse Lady.
Yeah, and then we got, like, Fleshbot comes up from underneath the countertop looking upwards. Holy crap. I don't think she needs to be doing that. It's like wiping off the corner of her mouth. Jeez.
Well, so, there's a steak down there.
I'm sure tube steak, yeah. So then she starts playing with the
sap
nipples.
Pops.
And then they start playing with the nipples on the spheres.
And then we cut to O'Brien's nipples.
Ugh. Terrible. Yeah. And he's I like the headband she puts on him. It's like the Mulan theme going on.
She'll make a man out of him?
Yeah. Probably. Because he ain't gonna do it. Oh, so they get Bashir again back in the same suit, which presumably has not been washed.
Right.
Well, it hasn't gotten dirty yet.
We're doing push-ups. Well, not on the outside. It's a fungal forest on the inside.
No, this is Bashir. He's genetically superior. He doesn't sweat.
Also,
his body's 100% moisture efficient.
It's also probably some kind of space age super material that's like completely antimicrobial and
moisture away from your body.
Right. The same stuff they make Starfleet uniforms out of.
Right, right.
Spandex.
Although I can't help but notice that Quark has got a little bit of a moose knuckle going on in this costume.
Wow.
He's got a little bit of a moose knuckle. Got kind of a front butt. A little bit of a camel toe.
Frankie genitalia works. I mean, if all the stimulation bits are up in the ears, I mean, what's going on down there don't matter.
I don't know.
You just stick it in and start rubbing the ears until it goes off.
Oh, God.
Probably.
It's like Tune In Tokyo. And this is another good scene. You know, Quark is like, drink this. It's good for you. And then Bashir, actually being scientifically minded, wants to test it. And Quark seems surprised by this, which I don't understand.
The interesting thing, too, is that Bashir doesn't seem that concerned when his analysis turns up all the alcohol components. It's not until he gets to the actual literal sedative that he's like, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah. You tried to trick me. You guys are phony.
It's a fake.
It pleases me greatly seeing that meme on things that have nothing to do with Star Trek. The people who don't even know Star Trek know that meme. It's a fake. All right. So they're still talking. He's going to try to make Bashir win because he's got all of his – or he's going to try to make him lose because he has got all of his money on the mechanic. And okay. All right,
because everyone else – well, it's more that everyone else – everyone's been putting their money on Bashir.
Right. Because they're smart.
Yeah, which makes sense. You enjoy winning your, $2 or whatever.
And you're giving them the blankets no matter what.
Yes. Which is boo friggity who. Replicate them. Whatever. That's what I understand why blankets are like a thing. All right. So now we cut to the gruesome trio, and they're trying to figure out some sort of technobabble particle bullshit about chance and
why these particles are mostly facing the same way.
Yeah.
Because guess what? All neutrinos rotate in the same direction. Yeah. They got the science wrong.
Oh, completely.
Big surprise.
Yeah, but these are space neutrinos. These aren't like regular neutrinos.
Well, maybe the wormhole distorts neutrinos in this area, and so they can be crazy directions.
Right. Just lucky things.
Hey, Ken.
Yeah.
Where are the neutrinos?
Mm-hmm.
Something near the ear teeth?
In the basement, Ken.
It's in the gun, actually.
Oh, I can actually hear you now.
That's because Ken hasn't been talking much.
No, I mean, just when he was first talking, I could barely hear him.
He was being quiet for it, Max.
He doesn't want to wake Daddy.
Oh, don't wake Daddy.
God, no.
Or he'll beat you.
From Parker Brothers.
It's the most terrifying game.
Don't wake Daddy.
Or else.
God.
Your daddy works third shift and is asleep during the day. If you make a single noise, he'll wake up in a rage. Because he's so sleepy, he's not in control of his own faculties. He'll do things he'll regret later.
But you'll regret them now.
Oh, this is terrible.
So, at some point, Rom runs off with the Dabo girl, and I hope he just pounds her into next week.
Rom doesn't have that much initiative yet.
No.
But she's clearly just going to...
Maybe he'll get lucky.
That's it. You're out. Someone cut his mic. So they cut off the signal, so we can't see the racquetball match anymore. Everyone's all disappointed.
Then they start throwing the ball around the court, and every time it just lands in O'Brien's hand.
Right, right. Which is kind of neat. You know, I kind of like this. It's a good example of what's going on. And the, O'Brien looks ridiculous with his friggin' Izod shirt and headband.
But Bashir looks fine.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's,
the thing is, Bashir's
I'm okay with that.
Bashir has been in that so consistently, we've just been desensitized to its stupidity. So now O'Brien just looks dumb by comparison.
The thing I like about Bashir's uniform, or his sports uniform, is it still has his medical color on it.
Yeah.
Yes. I was going to say something about that.
It's like he's a Power Ranger and his professional color pervades every facet of his life.
Right. And not to mention, and I can't believe no one else has said this, it has built-in knee pads. No? Nothing? Okay. I just thought that was kind of funny. But all right. I guess you guys take your sports very seriously.
Very seriously.
Also, they're playing racquetball. I keep thinking the ball is a lime. So I keep wanting a margarita. The whole time I was watching, I was like, man, I want a margarita. I don't know why. And then I figured it out. So then Scooby and the gang come down and figure out what's going on with probability and why everything is going all weird. So there's Jadzia and Cisco with hair, who's different than regular Cisco. They're different characters. I don't care what you say.
What about that point in season 3 where he has hair, but he's also got the beard?
That's just his character Hawk from that TV show he was on, like, you know, 10 years prior. That's all he was. I mean, they just literally replaced the character and no one noticed. Didn't you see the like big-ass 50 caliber handgun he had with him all the time?
A 50 caliber handgun?
Yeah.
That's a big handgun.
Well, like a Desert Eagle, you know, whatever. So they go
That's not 50 caliber, Scott.
Yeah, it is. A Desert Eagle could be 50 cal, 0.5. Yeah, look it up.
Wouldn't that be 0.50 caliber?
Well, I mean, they call it 50 cal, but it's 0.5. I mean, you know, it's a gigantic.
50 caliber, that's like, you know, mounted weaponry, isn't it?
That's a big-ass Desert Eagle.
Yep, told you. It's a handgun, though. It's Israeli made.
I
can be nerdy about other things besides Star Trek, too.
No, you can't.
I have a hard time believing there's enough weight in the body to have that thing not just come up and smack you in the forehead anytime you try to shoot it.
That's why it has the triangle-shaped barrel.
Uh-huh.
To add more weight. Okay, so back to Star Trek for just a second. Here's what I don't understand. Here's the point in the episode, and it took until, you know, the final few minutes where I finally went, what the hell, man? And I finally just got mad at the episode. This is what did it for me. So they figure out that probability itself, that incredibly unlikely things can be controlled to happen in a certain way. Some person can have luck or not. And they go down to the Elorian's bar, and they go, oh, are these the things that are doing the thing? And the guy's like, yeah, they're doing this. Oh, I replicated them. I made them bigger, so it increased the effect. And Jadzia and Cisco, without a word, pull out their phasers and blow them up. What the hell is this? They have these objects that can control probability itself, and they just mindlessly destroy them?
Presumably the original still exists somewhere. And I also like the presented thoughtlessness of Federation technology. So, like, for one thing, dude doesn't know how to turn it off. And the other ones are only on because the one he put in the replicator to be scanned was already running. So it just replicated them, turned on.
Right.
And, like, there's no control in place to, like, stop something from being enlarged and also having all of its power magnified by that same factor.
Right. It'd be like replicating something that self-replicates. You could, like, take over the station in, like, 2 seconds.
So, you know, what if they built replicated one the size of a planet?
Right. They could, like, control all the luck in the universe? What the hell?
Except the problem is that they don't really control anything.
And yeah, that's the big problem with this episode, is that they don't try in any way to hint at an explanation for why these things do what they do.
Right. I mean, and
the luck that they generate basically is caused by the luck of whether you win the game or not. But there's no control whether you're going to win the game or not, because that's just luck. And whatever your luck was is what gets passed out to everyone else.
Right. So it has like this aura of the luck you just had.
Right. So there's no practical application for this.
So actually the interpreted use of it is completely backwards. All the thing does is absorb and broadcast out the luck you used to have.
Right, because the Ellorian was winning a lot. That what made his fortune change all of a sudden? Because every time he did it, he would win. And then he did it once, and then he started losing, and then he just lost everything. So what changed?
Cancer.
Cancer changes everything. So, and the other thing. So we have Jadzia. She's wearing a blue uniform. She's clearly a scientist of some kind, and she's not at all curious about how these machines work, how they do anything, or that she just blows them up. I just don't get it.
It's not her field. She doesn't care.
Oh my god! So she's a PhD then? Okay.
she's not a statistician. Like probability does not concern her.
Oh my gosh! It's just weird. Like Starfleet people would be like, "Oh, new technology that can do something we've never seen before." Meh, blow it up. It's annoying me.
It ate her file.
They had to die.
Well. The other thing, too, is you have to remember, this is Sisko.
He punched Q.
Yeah. He's not Picard.
I know. He's easier to provoke. We should do an episode about that, but only that one scene. And just ignore the whole rest of the episode.
Yeah, we can do that. I'm right with that.
You know, maybe Jadzia didn't want to blow them up, but Sisko gave her orders to, we're going to find the machine and we're blowing the fuck up and it's going to be rad.
But then
Jadzia's like, okay.
Come on, old man.
That sounds pretty accurate, honestly.
Or, you know, maybe it wasn't Jadzia that was okay with this. Maybe it was Dax.
Maybe.
That's true.
maybe that's some Curzon coming out there of, this shit's going to be awesome.
Oh man.
No, but I mean they could have just dropped in one line like, you know, quantum this or, you know, resonance string that, something like that.
Or they
just
could have
to imply.
Yeah, they could have done something like, okay, let's round these up and send them off to Starfleet scientific thing, you know, let's ship them back to the Federation.
It just seems like, oh shit, we're almost out of episode.
Yeah.
Or even just a line saying that they're going to keep on increasing in power and it's going to become dangerous. We have to stop it now.
Right. Yeah. Right. Some urgency to it. Right. But nothing. It's just terrible, lazy writing at that point. I'm like, it's totally out of character. Didn't make any sense. And they could have easily fixed it, like by all those wonderful suggestions.
Yeah.
Listen, you're going to make O'Brien win this racquetball game and we can't have that. Blow him up. It's a station-wide conspiracy.
Yes. How awful does he have to feel right now, knowing that like something that had to alter the fabric of reality for him to be a winner in any sort of way at all? How do you go home and to your wife after that?
It was just Eco Jess worried about like, oh, he's going to be insufferable if he wins. We need to put a stop to this.
The thing is, though, Bashir would be insufferable if he won, too. So,
but he's already insufferable, so what would be the difference?
He would get worse.
Ugh.
I mean, if you need proof of that, just think of Season 7 Bashir, where he's not hiding it anymore.
Yeah, I'd like to watch some of the later episodes.
And that's the other thing with this. Like, okay, obviously they didn't have that plot point in mind this early, and they weren't, like, playing that angle up. But, like, all things being equal, at the end of the day, Bashir kind of would have had to lose the game just for the sake of keeping his cover.
Well, I don't know. Do you really think people would have been suspicious if the young, in-shape guy would have won at racquetball? I mean, I wouldn't immediately jump to, he's clearly genetically modified.
I don't know. Bashir... The guy who won the championship in college, winning against dumpy engineer guy who can't really do much of anything without breaking into a sweat.
Yeah, Potato Man.
And plus, Bashir has consistently been portrayed as being just really damn good at everything. So, of course, be good at racquetball too.
Right. Exactly. So I don't know.
And especially against well, especially against Potato. So
yeah,
Bashir has a type advantage against Potatoes.
That was a terrible episode. Can we? Was is it just me? That was a terrible episode.
It was just you, yeah. Actually,
yeah. It was. It was the only bad part was just where they ran out of episode at the end.
Yeah, but it had some silly shit, but yeah, it was fun. It's better than some of the episodes we reviewed on here. God.
Apparently, really? One of their concepts was to play this up more like a butterfly effect thing, which I think would have been really interesting, but would never have had enough time to really be explored to the depth it would need to be in a 43-minute TV episode.
Especially if spending time on good stuff like racquetball.
Shirtless.
This may not be a good episode, but it's a fun episode and an enjoyable
one. Right, and that's the whole point.
Yeah.
And then we have one last scene where, oh, back to jail.
Yeah. Yeah, Odo shows up conveniently to be like the Deus Ex Machina and just goes, oh, they changed their mind again.
Yeah, because like Martis is like, you can't possibly blame me for this.
Yeah.
It just goes all like, oh, don't I wish, but we have nothing to charge you with because apparently probability crimes aren't a thing on the books. But yeah, then Odo comes in to save the day by hauling him back to jail.
Oh, and also he got scammed by the old lady.
Yeah, which is awesome. Which made me happy.
So there is one, like, subtext to this episode that I thought was kind of neat, which is that you've got the competition between the genetic listener and the dude with giant ears.
Oh, very good.
And I thought that was just kind of perfect.
No, that's, I like that.
And then Quark comes to bail listener out, but for a price.
Yeah, which was also very good on Quark. Very quirky.
And the last line of the episode is Quark saying, I'm listening.
Yeah, so they tried. They just didn't give 100%. They gave a good 75% of this episode, I think.
This was a good episode.
Ugh, no.
Scott's just wrong.
Ugh.
Yep, you're wrong.
Oh, that's fine. I'll live with it.
Well, all right, well, how about we watch a bad episode next week?
Something that we can all enjoy agree it. Is. Yeah, something we can all agree is terrible.
So long as it's not boring.
I don't know, because I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I can't guarantee that.
Oh, God.
Yeah, which episode are we doing?
Fury.
Okay, so you actually did check.
Yes.
Fury. Is it DS9 or what?
Voyager.
No, you know what we watched after DS9?
Yourself in the mirror crying? What?
It's Voyager. Oh. Fury.
And this is an episode picked because of stuff in the news recently.
Oh, God.
Right?
Oh, what? It's going to have...
Yep.
All right. Clicky, clicky. Right.
So let's see. This.
Oh, my God. Oh, yes. Yes, this will be fun.
So next week, let's all watch Jennifer Lean get angry.
Yay.
But not on the news this time. Now she'll be doing it because someone's paying her to act that way. Remember that? Remember when she got paid to act?
Hey, calm down now. She's a local girl.
Shit. A little
she's
too
a
local.
Neighbor.
Yeah. She's your neighbor, all right. The hills have eyes, my friend.
Yeah, and I thought all the bad stuff happened in Georgia.
Oh.
It does.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so this ought to be good. We get to explore the hillbilly rage. Because from what I saw, she was basically... you ever watch South Park? You know the bus driver lady? That's kind of her.
Well, we'll go more into Cass and Jennifer Lane next week.
I'm not going anywhere into Cass.
Not even back in Voyager?
Okay, maybe back in Voyager. Maybe season one.
But she was like 2 years old. That's gross.
Actually, I think she was a year old in the first season.
Yeah, well, that's the only problem with her race is they never get legal.
Well, that didn't seem to be a problem for Tom Paris.
No, no.
Or Neelix.
Or Neelix.
Mm-hmm. Now, like, with Neelix, you can almost excuse it because Neelix is also an alien. He doesn't have the same sensibilities as humans would.
Right. It's like we don't, you know, talk about Japanese porn. Can't judge him on it.
Besides, the Japanese porn laws are getting more and more strict all the time, so even they're trying to shape that up. but no, like, Tom Paris should know better.
Oh, yeah.
Just flat out.
Well, yeah, it's part of the Japanese, because they got those blocky genitals.
yeah, that's a no wonder the Japanese population is decreasing. All their genitals are blurry. That's why they're dying out, the poor people.
All the genitals are like indie games. They're all 8-bit.
You're not supposed to bite them at all. Oh, gosh. All right, so we got Voyager next week. So I got a week to recover from this episode. Well, I had 2 weeks because we didn't, because Skype was acting up last week. So we actually had
Had a week to recover in advance.
Yeah.
We advanced you a week's vacation, Scott.
All right, I'll mark it down. I got to redo my taxes now, thanks. I got all my contractor 1099 stuff I got to do.
And meanwhile, you can be thinking about what episode of Enterprise we can watch 2 weeks from now.
Oh, indeed I will. Indeed I will.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
now,
gosh.
The thing is, should I make you suffer for making me watch Call Meanie without a shirt?
Ah, well.
Now here's the thing. You're going to be making us watch Enterprise, so we're going to be suffering anyway.
Right. Most of the population of this podcast will be suffering no matter what your intent is.
Yes.
Oh, and the listeners, like, we're all in one big relationship.
Enterprise is suffering.
All right, I'll find something good for Enterprise, and then I'll I'll take care of all that. Just sit back and relax and just let it happen.
Think of England.
Just let the Enterprise wash over you.